You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, 88.1 in Ithaca and 91.9 in Watkins Glen. And this is the Made of Clay Report. And I'm Eric Clay, your host. And our guest on this show to this morning is Mike Welch. Welcome.
Thank you, Eric.
It's good to have you here this morning.
Thanks.
And I know that you're in preseason practices and for football. And but today the subject, well, I'm sure we will get to football, but the main issue is you. Who are you? And you know what are some of the stories that we need to know to start this conversation? Because what we do on this show is we try to model how we get to know each other, even when we may not have any much of a clue about each other. Mm-hmm. So, who are you?
Well, I'm a father, uh-huh. Husband, two lovely children that are now one's a mother and soon to be mothered again, uh-huh. And my son is in education, mm-hmm. and coaching, and my wife Sue, who we met at Ithaca College when we were undergraduates, so that worked uh-huh. out really well, and uh-huh. We just celebrated our 41st anniversary.
Wow!
So tells a little bit about me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really enjoy that part of my life. Professionally, I'm an educator. Mm-hmm. I've taught high school and coached several sports, but over the last many, many years, I've coached football, mm-hmm. and at the collegiate level, and have been very fortunate to be able to do that. I think it's an exciting place to teach and work in a college setting. You get an opportunity to coach and really develop relationships with some pretty very, very exciting people, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. a college age student. And I like to believe that I have an opportunity to take a thing called football, an event called football or sport, and use that as a microcosm for life. A lot of the things that happen mm-hmm. in my sport, not only just on the game field, but throughout our season and throughout the relationships, there are a lot of things that happen in life, and if they can respond accordingly in terms of everything from performance and preparing to perform mm-hmm, to mm-hmm. how you handle adversity. So I really enjoy that part of it. I get great satisfaction out of working with young people, and it's, as I say, it's been a big part of my life. So those two mm-hmm. things. I do like to have fun. I love music. I love playing sports. I've always been that, and right now my knees aren't in any position to do a lot of the things I used to do, but
right.
I really do enjoy competing mm-hmm, mm-hmm. outside, and so that's it's pretty simple, but I enjoy every minute of it.
That's really neat. Okay, well, and I just want to highlight you identify yourself as an educator,
mm-hmm.
and the root of the word is to draw people out. To educate them is to draw them out and mm-hmm. to help them to discover what they're made of, and that's a lot of coaching too. But you picked the word educator and not coach, and I think that's significant. Mm-hmm. We'll pick up on some of these things later.
Sure.
You brought some music, and we're going to start with the first piece of music is going to be Glenn Miller's orchestra and Moonlight Serenade, and we'll listen to that now. Do you want to say something about that piece before we listen, or after?
Well, this was my mother and father's favorite song.
Mm-hmm. This was their generation.
This was their generation.
Theme song.
This, yeah. And this is, they played this a lot, and they danced to this mm-hmm. a lot. And I have some of my fondest memories of my life was my childhood memory, and certainly my mother and father's. So this song again is something that anytime I hear it or hear that era, there were many, many more other songs,
sure.
but this one particularly, I think of them, and it brings me great joy.
Great.
Thank you.
And that was Glenn Miller and Moonlight Serenade. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Mike Welch. So Mike, you know, tell me about, you know, what brought you to Ithaca, what brought you back, you know, what has connected you to this place?
I went to high school in Dansville, New York. It's a small town south of Rochester, very big sports town, very blue collar. Mm-hmm. Education was very important, very, very strong family knit community. And one of my neighbors, his name was Tom Vogt, had the opportunity to go to Ithaca College and play for a man by the name of Dick Lyon. And had success in football and several other sports. He got his education, became a coach, and then he eventually went back to Ithaca as a graduate assistant. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in his process of recruiting, he went back to his roots and recruited myself. Yep. And another star player out of Dansville, and we decided to go to Ithaca. We mm-hmm, were mm-hmm. at that time offered partial scholarships, and so it was an affordable thing for us. Mm-hmm, and I knew that I eventually wanted to teach and coach, so certainly was a great mix. So that brought me to Ithaca, brought me to Ithaca College, and then I left for 11 years after I graduated, got mm-hmm. an education, coached and taught at Rush Henrietta in Rochester, went to Albany State University, then out to St. Louis, Missouri, to mm-hmm. Washington University, which is uh-huh. a beautiful, yep. Great school. And then back to, and then I got a call from my head coach, Jim Butterfield, and said I had an opening and would I like to come back and coach at my alma mater. And there wasn't any question that's what I was going to do. So we packed our bags and drove back, came back to Ithaca.
Wow. So my sense is that coaching programs, the kinds of relationships coaches have with their players, very often are the life-changing relationships. Was that true for you? Is that why when Butterfield made that call, you know, what about the experience of being part of his team made you so receptive when he called?
Well, he was a life changer. Mm-hmm. As a coach.
How so?
He knew how it worked in terms of commitment. I think commitment was something that we didn't talk a lot about, but he was a prime example. He treated his team like a family,
right?
And treated us every player with respect, but yet demanded a lot of us, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which I think motivated us to try to reach our full potential as players, and then
or at least discover what was possible.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then. And of course, it's by example. He talked about his life to his players. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What made differences in his life? I mean, he was a World War II veteran. He had also tried to play Division I at a couple of different schools and struggled and mm-hmm. Came from a family, and he talked about his family and the depression and his father and his mom. So, you know, he used a lot of examples of life that, again, was he related mm-hmm. to football. So,
and he was of your parents' generation.
Yeah, in my parents' generation. So mm-hmm. he just ran a first-class program mm-hmm. and although when I was there, we weren't as good as the teams that followed.
Right.
But life lessons I've learned from him, I was able to carry over into my my coaching background, and I was able to pass a lot of the things that he taught me on to the young men, or in some cases, mm-hmm. yeah, young ladies that I had a chance to teach and coach. So, yeah. it's just kind of carrying it forward. And mm-hmm. I just use him as an example. And so I think that everybody that played up there or had an opportunity to either play or even work with him were influenced by his integrity, his class, his love for people, and, mm-hmm. And the family unit. I think that was mm-hmm. that was how we were, and that's how I try to treat our players and build our program.
Right. You used a word to describe him that's I can't remember. It wasn't integrity. It wasn't loyalty. It was. And he didn't talk about it a lot. Commitment.
That
people who live that loyalty to others, that kind of expectation that we're all in this together, they don't talk about it too much, because if you talk about it too much, then you end up debating what it's about rather than just doing it.
You have to live it. Yeah, it's you really do. And he was one that did. We trusted him. I think trust is a big, mm-hmm. big factor. What he told us and what we needed to do to be successful, and also to do the right thing. You know,
right.
Those were all a part of it. And he lived that life, so that was made an impression on us.
Mm-hmm. Right. And trust is important when you are being asked to do something you don't fully understand or agree with, when you're being pushed.
Right.
And we tend to want to think about trust as what we agree to, but trust is what pushes us beyond what we're comfortable with.
Yeah, that's right, Clay. Trust needs to be there mm-hmm. for leaders. Mm-hmm. Once that's established, and it's very sacred, and you need to continue to build on that trust, because once it's violated, it's very hard to get back.
Right.
So there has to be a really... For leaders, has to be a sound foundation on what your goal and mission is, and you have to practice that every day. And winning and losing in the game, in the world of athletics,
right.
is something that's expected. And it's very easy to get outside of integrity and at least be tempted to maybe get that extra edge. And you never want to go there. And because once again, it's violated, it's almost very difficult to get back.
Right. And the violation of trust for something that's clearly unethical is I think a pretty straightforward in terms of how you manage that. But there's also a sense where you trust a person to see something in yourself that you don't necessarily see. And you trust them to push you in ways that you wouldn't necessarily choose, but you're going to work with them. And many times, I think it's important for people to live through the violation of trust where they've been misread,
mm-hmm.
because then you have to come back and say, no, I couldn't do that, or I could have done more. You didn't ask enough of me.
Right.
You know, and that's when we begin to feel like people are taking us as equals, and we're really in it together. Am I making
sense? Yeah, I would agree with that. Yep.
I come from a big sports area where we put lots of kids into Nebraska, Missouri, Arkansas, playing football and coaching
yes.
and stuff over the years. But I was the drum major, and I was in the marching band because I was not as big. I didn't get my growth spurt until after I was almost out of high school. So I was different than my brothers. But we had a band where we would compete at the state level in high school marching bands, but we would march with about a third of our musicians were middle schoolers. They were junior high students, because we didn't have enough to field a marching band without them. And we still won.
Yeah,
because
really.
The instructor knew how to pull out of people, and sometimes he pushed too much, and sometimes mm-hmm. he was out of line. Like he would throw a baton, or he would do something that was kind of outrageous,
mm-hmm.
and people called him, but he set the bar so high.
Yes.
He pushed himself so hard that we couldn't, and I quit the band over one of his outrageous things.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back and he said, you know, we need a drummer. We need somebody who can really hold the bass line, the mm-hmm. you know, the bass drum beat mm-hmm. for this, and mark just through this very complicated drill that we're doing. And I said, okay, I'll come back and we'll give it a go. But he had both the humility and the brash. And I think a good coach has both of those things.
I would agree with that, Clay. And it's interesting, the example that you've given in your life, at my hometown, Dansville, we had an outstanding marching band, mm-hmm. one that won national awards and mm-hmm. went to Canada. Mm-hmm. And it was Barry Haywood was the instructor or the band leader, and he was an Ithaca College grad, and he brought the Dansville band up to Ithaca College Stadium to play perform, and represent. Yeah. But it's the same, you know. Yeah, athletics and music are so close, the performers and the precision and the dedication and the commitment and the things that you said. You know, here you said, you know, I'm not going to do this, and then someone draws you back and say, hey, you can, and he probably made a big difference in your life. Just
he did. It was his successor who came back and said, "Will you be the drum major?" And I had never imagined myself, since I wasn't the athlete, and I'm one of seven siblings, uh-huh. mm-hmm. and two brothers were really successful athletes, and I wasn't. So that was a huge, you know, kind of pat on my back and an encouragement to step up to life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know what? When looking back on your life, what experiences have helped to shape your sense of integrity and commitment? What life trials or what life challenges have you chosen to face or been thrust on you that have forced you to kind of formulate your strategy?
I've had challenges, I think, my entire life.
But what were the early ones that kind of helped get you on this track?
Growing up, I was small. I was smaller than most of my classmates. So I was picked on a little bit, but somehow inside me, I had this determination that wasn't gonna bother me, mm-hmm. and I was gonna fight through it. And as I look back on it, those are important developmental years. And mm-hmm. my father guided me through that.
What did he do?
How
did he help you?
I'll give you an example in football, and in athletics, all these things happen and change people's lives. Sure. I was a sophomore, and this was my first year on varsity, and I had never been through a preseason practice. And as you know, preseason practice, which includes practicing twice a day, probably 10 days in a row. And I was probably in the third practice, and I really did not hold my own. It was hot. I was tired. I came home. I started complaining. And my father said, well, then quit. Mm-hmm. Quit. If it's too tough for you, then quit or stop complaining.
Right.
But as soon as he said the word, I said, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to quit. You know, I think he knew inside me that he was able to push that button, that I think he knew that I wouldn't do that, and that I just had to stop complaining and buckle up and get back to practice, and it was going to be hard, and just fight through it. And I did. Yep. And it was obviously a very big turning point, and you know, I thank him for that, at least knowing me. And I think that's where the moms and dads need to know their children, and coaches need to know their players, because there's going to be things in their lives that things are going to happen, and you hopefully will be in that position to make a difference, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, at those teaching moments, because there's teaching moments that happen all the time.
Right. But what I also hear in your father's comment was that if he's going to say that as a man of integrity, he's going to live with your choice if you choose to quit. It won't be the last time you have that conversation. It won't be the last time, but you pick your battles, and he will be there to support you on the ones you pick and don't pick.
That's right.
And that is that kind of regard, and it's not letting the child grow up, neither is it directing the child where to go, but it's, right, you know, we're face to face every step of the way.
Right.
And, you know, we face off and we turn out, we walk, mm-hmm, on. Mm-hmm.
And both parents were that way. They, mm-hmm, supported tough decisions, and I was very fortunate in that way.
Right. So How over the years of your work with youth, mm-hmm. and how have you changed? How has education and coaching changed? Mm-hmm. But also, how mm-hmm. have you changed?
I've become more and more aware of how powerful coaches are with young people. And it can be in a positive way, and it right. can be in a negative way.
Right. And
that there are young people that are passionate about certain things, and one of them may be athletics, one of them may be music, one mm-hmm. of them may be theater, something that really excites them. And you have an opportunity. We have a great opportunity to really teach some great lessons. Because the passion is there, mm-hmm. now you just got to direct it and help them along the way. So more and more I realize that. The second thing is that with sport, to really perform at a high level, you have to keep things simple, and you have to eliminate a lot of outside thoughts that they need to learn to focus clearly on one thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when they develop that ability, their performance will continue to be mm-hmm. improved. Obviously, they need the skills. They need the physical skills, and we give them that. But their ability to now forget about the past. Don't get working towards the future other than to plan.
Right.
But just to stay in the moment. Just to stay in that one day at a time. Just mm-hmm. to stay in what you're doing now. And if I can teach our players to do that by motivating them to say, hey, you're going to be a better player this way, I honestly think that they'll have a better life
right.
that way.
Right.
So that's where I've come to. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can develop my coaching skills and so on and so forth about my sport, but when I'm dealing with young people who want something badly, and I'm truly convinced that this is this will help their performance, but also will help them be happier people.
Right. You're making me remember a moment in preseason practice, because I played football, basketball, yes. around track, and I mean, mm-hmm. just because you did that where I grew up, I wasn't yeah. particularly good. But I remember staring across the line in these we were playing tackle or guard positions just by rotation, and mm-hmm. I was across from somebody. I weighed about 140, and this one weighed about 210, and I didn't stand a chance. But
yeah.
as long as I kept myself centered and mm-hmm. low, mm-hmm. then there was a chance I could knock him over me, and
right.
that worked.
Right.
You know, I just kept my presence of mind. I knew what I intellectually had to do, and I was aware of my body. And what you're talking about is a quality that comes with almost with, and I'm going to, this is a word that's going to not necessarily, you're talking about meditation.
Yeah.
You're talking about being absolutely centered in who you are,
yes.
physically, emotionally, and intellectually at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And we often don't think of sports as an exercise in meditation.
Mm.
But when you play that well in yeah. the moment, that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. It's we have team meetings every night during preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And I start every meeting with every player writing down 5 goals mm-hmm. for preseason. You know, what they want to achieve before our first game. And then we get into a relaxed state.
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
I talk them through that, you know, relaxing their, unhinging their jaw and relaxing their body.
Right.
Yeah.
It's probably some deep breathing and straightening the spine.
Deep breathing,
spine
yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah. Focusing on your breathing, mm-hmm. you know, staying in the moment.
Yep.
And then seeing themselves vividly achieving the first goal and the second goal and the third goal and then the fifth goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, well, I know that that's that's an important part of this process. It's an important part of what they're trying to do. They've got to vividly see what they want to accomplish and see themselves accomplishing it before they can have it, you know, before it can happen. And it's, you know, if they're thinking about that, and if I can teach them to, and I've got 12 opportunities, so there's some repetition there, and there's some, and if it's, if they're seeing some results and they're feeling themselves feeling good about themselves, and I think it's just going to carry over.
We're going to pick up on some of these themes, but let's go to you asked to play the theme song or the main theme from Cinderella Man.
Yeah.
Why is that show important to you?
It's just it's an inspirational movie to me. It's just, you know, he's an underdog, you know. He's had to, he was Russell Crowe did such a great job, and just a magnificent, you know, he got knocked down, and great family man, you know, that's what drove him, is trying to do, you know, he loved his wife and loved his children, and he's going through the depression, and then he became inspiration for others, you know, because he was able to overcome a lot, and it hasn't been an easy road, but it's been a fun road, and I know I've been knocked down, and I've been very fortunate to have something inside me that I always get back up. So I'd like this is where that's the Cinderella Man. He did it, and it was the ending was phenomenal when he won it. So
yeah, cool.
Enjoy it.
Okay. You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Mike Welch. Mike, I want to touch on about three different things that we can take up in any different order, and I don't normally do this laundry list, but, but you know, we have you know, for many years, and I think this is changing as coaching, life coaching, and it becomes more of a rhetoric that's around. People don't necessarily misread coaches as much as the drill sergeants and the absolute order dictators that mm-hmm. they were, and some were. I mean, there were some coaches at Ohio State and other places that just made a career out of being almost demonic in their expectations.
Right.
But that's not what we're talking about here. Also, there's a culture of stardom and celebrity that comes around sports. Even in middle school and high school, where the kids are really good at stuff, then they start thinking that they're kind of better than the rest. And you know, from our own conversations around what it means to be human, the two great sins are: you see yourself as better or worse than other people,
mm-hmm.
so you take advantage of them or let them take advantage of you. And the other one is you don't read the situation right.
Right.
And it's called idolatry. Mm-hmm. And those are the major sins both in Christianity and Judaism and Islam and in most of the world's religions.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another piece here. Sports is a place where we ritualize and we manage violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't, you know, there's a sense in which violence is out of control, but we don't have a good handle on what the role of sports in really understanding how to use conflict and challenge and physicality in more productive ways.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere in those three, where would you like to start?
Well, sports offers an opportunity to compete.
Yeah.
I really believe that humans love, for the most part, like to compete. And some more than others in different ways.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The game of football is a very physical game. That's what attracts it to people that play it and mm-hmm. people that watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to believe that it's a game of beauty. It is mm-hmm. physical. But there are protective pads, and the game is changing in the sense to protect our players even more. But the intent of the game is for to take a football and run it across a goal line, and there's going to be 10 other people that are going to try to help that person get there, and then there's going to be 11 that are going to try to stop them.
Right.
So that's being very, very simple. So
right. But I mean, you talk about competition, but competition mm-hmm. is a polite word for conflict. You know, mm-hmm. conflict within certain parameters, within mm-hmm. certain rules.
Mm-hmm.
And football is not just a men's sport, though it's predominantly a men's sport. I have a niece who played football in junior high in Arlington, Virginia. Was the first young
wow.
woman girl on the team, and she went on to be the first female announcer at football games in Brown back mm-hmm. in the 1990s, early 2000s, because that was her love. That
sure.
was one of her passions. But
my daughter would have played football if she had a chance to do it. So,
yeah.
Well, she organized some flag football when she was in high school here. So. She loves the sport.
Right. Yeah. What makes the competition, the conflict, the physicality of football a good exercise in dealing with conflict and physicality in life?
Well, there's going to be a winner and a loser.
Mm-hmm.
And how you handle that?
Occasionally there's a tie, but not often.
Not very often.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But even you got to handle that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
It's we win and lose every day.
Right,
you
right.
know, it's how you handle it. And it's hard. And when you work so hard to try to achieve something like sports nowadays,
mm-hmm.
and in many cases it's gone over the top. We've expect too much of our young people's time.
Mm-hmm.
I like to believe that even though we do expect a lot with our players up at Ithaca, it's still a game, and they still can be students, and they still can enjoy college life.
Right.
But when you put that much into something
mm-hmm.
and you have success, I think you learn. You learn a lot of lessons. And when you don't have success, when you lose, you also learn lessons. Mm-hmm. It's just, and that's life. It really is. I like to keep it as simple as that. I have to, you know, when things don't happen well in my personal life, I really have something to go back on. And I'll say this too. Mm-hmm. And this is really, really important. And this isn't football.
Right, right.
The greatest thing, one of the greatest things I think that has happened in our society is the opportunities that have been given girls and women mm-hmm. to play athletics. Mm-hmm. They are stronger. They are running companies. Many of them. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at the CEOs of, who are women in this country, mm-hmm. I'd be willing to bet that most of them were athletes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And but that's also true of men. The most it is. Successful men, mm-hmm. Both academically mm-hmm. and professionally, mm-hmm. have tended to have, in terms of leadership,
right.
have tended to be athletes.
That's right. And because they've handled adversity. My daughter, I'm so proud of her. She has her own company now. She's only 32 years old. She was her career as a lacrosse player. She did everything from break her nose to lose some close games to win some. But that up and down and that ability to pick herself up. I mean, she played at Ithaca College. They're going to play in the semifinals, the NCAA playoffs. And the 2 days before that game, she got a ball right on her nose and broke her nose, blood all over. But she put a mask on and played in that game, mm-hmm. and because she was a key figure in it. And I know that doing that, she'll be able to draw on that when something happens with her mm-hmm. and her company. And it just,
right. And what I want to emphasize is both sides. It's the ability to pick yourself up after the adversity, but it's also the ability to be comforted by your teammates
yes.
and your family.
Oh.
Because a lot of people don't know how to be comforted
right.
when they've been hurt. And that creates a whole nother set of
whole
problems.
Nother dinner.
Yeah.
The family atmosphere lose. That you can create yeah. within the team.
Yeah.
That's my biggest challenge. I've got 130 players.
Wow.
That I have to draw as one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That they have to all of a sudden give up their ego and say, I'm working hard for the team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to do that, it takes more than just hours on the practice field.
It's
off.
It's not a complete giving up. I'm working hard for the team.
Right.
I am here fully
right.
present and accountable
Correct.
For the team.
It's for the
it's,
team.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
for
yeah.
the team. And that's how we want
yeah.
our lives to be. That's how we want our families to be.
Our
community to
be.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. yes. And it's giving up the egos and doing more. And I'm really proud of our team. I mean, we do a lot of community things, mm-hmm. and I think that's important. I mean, we did do car washes and give a $600-$700 check to kids at GX for their after school program, mm-hmm. and then we have an all sports day where they come up and our team is around them, but they see it and they see our players, and we do a number of those community things, and that's and I know that other sports teams do that too.
But
that makes
them
them better community. And then you know what it is, I'm hoping that one of my players now goes back to his community, and then we'll do the same thing. So
right, or wherever he communicates,
or wherever he goes, yeah,
he goes mm-hmm. to the future that he'll mm-hmm. he'll carry that mm-hmm. skill set with.
Yep.
I don't know how recruiting. You're Division III, and I don't know mm-hmm. how your recruiting goes. But what do you really look for in a person?
Mm-hmm.
And where I want to go next after that is when do things go off the rail with an athlete where you either have to say this has got to change or you've got to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, we hope it's before he gets there.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's and I can do that as a as but a college as a college
signs,
coach.
And
but
what are the signs that you see?
Yeah.
So who are you recruiting, and how do you, when we recruit a student athlete,
when I'm recruiting a football player, first of all, he needs to be able to play. You know, he's got to be talented enough to come. I'm not for a young man to come here and not be able to play. It's does no one any good. He's going to be frustrated. He's going to, and we're not going to be very good. We're not going to win a lot of games. So he's got he needs to be a talented player. However, we look for character. He has to be a person of character.
And how do you assess that? What are you looking?
It's pretty easy. I shouldn't say that.
You have a sense of it. That's probably pretty
intuitive. You have to develop a relationship within your coaching community, with the high school coaches and where you're at.
Right.
And you have to have some people that you will trust. And
giving you feedback from outside.
Exactly right.
It's not just your gut.
Yeah, that's right. So, and that's where a coach. That's where I believe a program has to have a core of what your program stands for before you even go out and look for who you want. Okay, we want to win championships. I'm not going to.
You want good athletes. That.
That's right. And we are going to work hard to do that. However, I want a strong community. I want players with character. I want players who not only no one's perfect.
Right. How have your players demonstrated their character to you?
How they treat others. How they treat their parents when they're visiting. Are they selfish? Do they talk a lot about themselves? About how great their teams are. When they visit, are they more interested in seeing the co-eds or partying? Or where's the next party? Or are they interested in championships? Or or talking more about the X's and O's? And just as important is the education. You know, when they come here, they really need to be serious about their education.
Yeah, they're playing Division III. They got to get a degree.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And you have to find that out, because if football is the only thing that drives them, it's going to be very, very hard. And you can see that in their academic record. That's why at Ithaca it seems to be, and certainly you're a graduate of Cornell. Our admissions aren't going to accept them, you know.
Right.
See the same, if they're going to say, "Hey, Mike, Coach Welch, there's not enough here." He probably would not make it. I trust them, that's where that team is affected. So this is a whole process. It's admissions, it's our coaching community, it's our one-on-one contact, how he plays. Some people play hard for a period of time and then they don't play hard. So, those are things that we look at. And, if they don't play hard, if they take plays off, then that's hard to change. It's hard to change in 4 years where he's going to make a difference.
Right. So you're looking for people that you can really just take one or two more steps down the road.
Yeah.
And you don't have to, this is not a reform or redirect your life program.
No, the expectations are too high in terms of the success of your program. And so you just don't, that's, again, you got to go to what your cores are. You know, with us, I want this to be an educational experience for our players that come. I want them to come and learn and play football, but also learn about life and all of that. But, as you said, this isn't a place where I'm going to be able to change somebody completely. We don't have the time, and it affects too many other people.
Right.
Yeah.
You have said, the ability to kind of help people integrate into a team, a family, become more complete, more effective human beings as well as athletes. Have there been incidents where you've said, I'm almost ready to hang up my hat on this one. This is a situation that has got to change, and I have to intervene forcefully.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things have taken you to the brink of your ability to tolerate or to deal with?
In order to be an effective coach, you've got to be a communicator.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to develop a relationship with each one of my players. And as I say, there's a lot on our football team, so I need to rely on our assistant coaches too. So yep. They ought to be all on the same page. But we need to be able to communicate with them early, very early. I need to know where they're from, you know, what their family is like, you know, what mm-hmm. challenges they've had that other people may not have. You know, and I do that with conversations throughout their career, with, you know, one-on-one mm-hmm. over the course of a year with our guys. When something goes wrong, we correct it and let them know what the expectations are. And if it continues, it could be anything from, let's say, drugs or alcohol, which is maybe a common reason why we'll lose some kids.
Mm-hmm.
The academic end of things, the school takes care of. I mean, there are standards, mm-hmm. and if you don't meet, you're not going to be here.
And you're not enforcing
right,
those. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but there's also some behaviorals. I mean, a lot of play in the press around the sexual misbehavior or
yes.
intimidation.
Yeah, there are school regulations that if they cross the line, they're done. It's up to me to let them know that is there, and this is what's going to happen. They need to know the expectations, but there's some gray area in there. Again, it's the communication. They need to know what the expectations are. If they don't meet those expectations, then they know it's time to leave. And usually, Clay, they take themselves out of it many times.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you have a quality program, which I believe we have, because the number of kids with great character, the kids that don't have character stick out. And they many times eliminate themselves.
Well, they don't want that kind of attention.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's too hard to meet the... what we require. So many times I don't eliminate them. They eliminate themselves.
Right. No. And I think, and if they know why, and they know, and they can say to you, either I'm not ready or I don't agree, or whatever.
That's right.
Then you have an honest relationship and you model the integrity that you expect of them.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's powerful.
Yeah.
You at the very beginning, you talked about the kinds of relationships you have with players as family, family is, you know, people have a lot. That word has a lot of baggage. For some mm-hmm. people, their families are the last place mm-hmm. they feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's been a lot of manipulation or bad behavior or mm-hmm. or just disappointment. But family and I don't want to say as an ideal,
mm-hmm.
but as a crucible for learning to engage in meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be painful. There's going to be emotional, if not physical, blood just because of the how we are when we're up close with each other. You describe a quality of relationship with your students as an educator
mm-hmm.
that I think would be a quality of relationship that most faculty could have. If they saw their students as part of a team,
yeah.
Why aren't we making that connection educationally?
I think that's a great, great thought. I think that's a wonderful thought. I believe there are teachers like that. I do.
Yeah.
And you know, I flash in my mind back in high school. I had to. A 5 foot, 55-year-old English teacher. She commanded her classroom, but we all this was her classroom. This was she was cared about everyone in there, and it was, but it wasn't the same with others. You know, it was, she wanted everybody to learn, and I think that's what makes teaching great. That maybe they do see that vision as they, this is our class, this is our family, this is our group, and everybody's important. But you know, everybody's going to do what they're supposed to do for the betterment of the of the classroom. There's certain guidelines that you have to abide by. So I think that would, that's really powerful, and I think it was used more and more. It'd probably be more effective.
What is, and this, I know this isn't something you've necessarily prepped on at all, but what would be involved in getting coaches to coach teachers about this kind of teamwork? I mean,
how can you do it?
Yeah.
Well, it's, be honest with you, Clay, that's what we do within our own coaching community.
I know,
is
that's
we
what
do
you
our
do
own
among yourselves, but
yeah,
how,
that's
but
it.
How do we
yeah.
get it out of the,
how do they get it out of there?
Out of the, what
yeah.
I would say, the sports ghetto, because
yeah.
there are a lot of academics who don't
yeah.
take sports seriously.
Right.
And yet so much of what's needed in a laboratory or in a startup business,
that's right.
is this capacity to work together,
to take teamwork.
What you know, to challenge
yeah.
the other, and to bring them down, to cut them off at the knees at times, just because that needs to happen.
Yeah.
You know, why aren't we doing that?
Why aren't we doing that? That's good. Well, I, yeah, maybe that might be my next profession. I don't know. I'm trying to, who knows? But it,
well,
if you ever get to that point, I mean, we've had some fabulous teams. I've had some, not in the sense of just winning and losing.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
You know, that we've won. And
some of your best teams weren't
yeah.
necessarily your winningest teams, but they
right.
they worked really well together.
They really did. They really did. And it's magical. It really is. It's what you strive for. And when a coach can step back and you can see all these players just handling all the things themselves and saying the right things and being there for each other, and you see the seniors being there for a freshman and developing that relationship, and they look up to each other and they're looking out for each other. So that when you see that happen, it is magical.
And that's another way in which sports are different than a lot of your courses as an academic are taken with your age mates or with people at a similar level of knowledge
yeah.
as you, rather than having everybody
yeah.
across the spectrum.
Right.
I mean, I grew up in a very small school, so we had a math teacher who would teach with all of us, but those of us who were quick were to work with those who were getting it, and then we'd be challenged in another way at another time. But,
yeah.
but that's how she taught.
Yeah. And I believe there are faculty and there are teachers at our institutions that once they get into their major, like for instance, we
sure.
have physical therapy, and that becomes a very I think close-knit type of that, because they're very unique in what they do, and expectations are so high. I think you see great relationships with those particular. That's just one, and I'm sure at Ithaca there's some others. But the more they do it, I think the more better experience our students are going to have.
Cool. Now, the question that I end the show with, and I should have asked a couple of minutes ago, was what do you do to take care of yourself emotionally, intellectually, physically, to kind of restore yourself to balance when things seem to go out of control?
Well, exercise has been a big part of my life. And having come from a family with heart disease, I know that that's something I always had to do. And I watched it very, very carefully. But unfortunately, 2 years ago, I did have a bypass. And I was very fortunate I didn't have a heart attack, but it was diagnosed and everything was good, and everything seems to be back in order. So exercise is very important, not only physically but also mentally, as I think many people
right.
know.
And if you're teaching breathing, you're also practicing breathing and all these other
yes,
things.
Yes, I am. That you're working with. There's, and I do. I do meditation. I do visualization myself with different parts of my life. It and again, it doesn't have to be athletic, and it doesn't have to be coaching. It can be personal relationships and so on. So, I'm a firm believer in that and in meditation and I haven't taken yoga yet, but I think I want to. Get involved in that. So I those things are very, very important. And prayer is important to me,
right,
too.
I'm a, right.
Faith has helped me throughout most of my life. So I draw on that, too.
Yep. I get it. I sense it. Mm-hmm. Mike, it's been really great to get to know you.
Thanks, Clay. It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're gonna close with the Hollies recording of "He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother."
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to say something about that, or just let it speak for itself?
Yeah, that's that's that family that at Ithaca College that not only with my athletes, but people there. It's that kind of a school. It's we kind of are there for each other, and I've always had that strong connection. With a lot of the people that I went to school with, and somehow this fits. I think we're still 40 years away. We're still very close, and I think a lot of it is that we all know we're there for each other, and I think that's the way it should be.
Thank you, Mike.
You're welcome.
The road is long, with a many a winding tongue that leads us to who knows where. My brother.